We'll go ahead and get started. So thanks very much, everybody, for showing up, and we'll go through tonight's deck. So a follow-on to a couple of previous things. We discussed it at Q&A. We had a poll at Q&A about it, and then it was announced in the newsletter about us having remote assistance one-on-one being available, and we are ready to launch. So the logistics of it is going to be, first off, I really encourage everybody to consider whether the issue that you want to bring forward as a one-on-one, whether it's appropriate for a regular Q&A session. First off, you'll be able to draw on the expertise of many members as opposed to just one person who's helping you one-on-one. And not only that, but whatever issue you're having, you never know, other people might be having the same problem. And so we can all learn from issues that other people are having. So consider that before you decide whether you want to do it as a one-on-one. If you do want to request a one-on-one remote assistance, send an email into oneononerequest@opcug.ca with the request. In that, make sure you include your membership info so that we can validate that you are a member. So something like name and address, your membership number, your email address of record in our membership database, something that we can validate that you actually are a member, because this is a service that will only be available to members. Include as much information as you can in the email about your situation. I say copious details on the issue. So your operating system version, or if you're worried about a particular application, what version of that application you're running, any error messages you get, configuration things that you might be relevant to the issue, anything at all that will help somebody else to help you. Also include information about anything that you've already tried to resolve the issue, and that way can stop anybody from wasting time and suggesting same things of stuff that you've already tried and didn't work. And of course, what the results were from those attempts, whether you got any error messages from it, or it just didn't work, or it caused adverse side effects, whatever. Also include an email address and phone number that we will contact you. So behind the scenes, what's going to happen is that we'll vet the incoming request for assistance, make sure that it's complete enough that other people can help out with. And then it will be distributed to those who have indicated that they're willing to help out with one-on-one assistance. And currently, I believe we have 9 people. So thanks very much for those people who have stepped forward on that front. If somebody on that distribution thinks that they can help, then they'll contact you directly, and then you'll work out details with that person. So you'll be informed if nobody thinks that they can provide remote assistance for your particular issue. Otherwise, you and the person offering assistance can work out the details, time and dates and things like that, how you want to connect on remote assistance and so forth. Generally, it's going to be probably, if you're on Windows, the Windows Quick Assist, I think, works really, really well. Zoom is also a possibility, which will allow for remote access to another computer over the Internet. Both you and the person who is giving assistance are expected to provide feedback on the service back to that one-on-one request at opcug.ca email address. We really want to track this, find out how it's working, and so that we can improve the service as we go forward. What I'm calling musings and mutterings on this. So this service is only available to members. So if you're a guest on the call tonight, if you are thinking about joining, this might be something that will push you over the edge to actually join the group. It's only $20 a year. Because this is something that is really completely new, at least in the start, be prepared for hiccups. There may be problems that come about, and please be patient with it. A really important thing is the next bullet point. Neither the OPCUG or the person offering assistance can accept responsibility for a negative outcome. Whenever you're helping somebody else with a computer problem and you're making changes to the computer, there is always the possibility that something bad is going to happen. So make sure that you can recover from any misadventure. We really recommend that you have an image backup of your computer that you could recover if, for whatever reason, your computer becomes unbootable through attempts to solve your problem. And we can't promise that we're going to be able to fix your problem. All we can do is say we'll try. We really do want that feedback on the initiative. And please only make requests through that email address, one-on-one request at opcug.ca. We have processes that are tied to that email address. And if you try to circumvent it by going to your favorite helper, I'm going to recommend to everybody on the list that if they get a request directly, that they reply to you saying, please send your request into one-on-one request at opcug.ca and not take it on directly. So that's all we have for that right now. So the email address is live. If you want to take advantage of the service, go ahead and send in the request following the advice on the slides that we've had so far. And I said I would mute people unceremoniously, and I just did. So next up, we have some things that were put in by Alan, but I'm going to be speaking to them because Alan's voice is gone. And so this one is a YouTube channel that we've talked about this guy, Dave Plummer, before. And he had just the other day, he came up with a new video on how to set up local AI like ChatGPT on your own local machine so you don't have to go out over the internet to, and he talks about why you might want to actually do that. It is similar to Alan's presentation that he gave a couple of weeks ago, I guess, on running your own chatbot. But this one, unlike Alan's poor excuse for a computer, this one runs on a $50,000 computer workstation from Dell. It has a 96-core Threadripper CPU, which is worth $10,000, 512 gigabytes of RAM, dual GPUs with 96 gigabytes of video memory. It was $30,000 for the pair of video cards alone. So it's quite interesting. Then we have another YouTube tech on here about a new thing called OpenAI 01. And so it is sort of the new evolution in chatbots. So they describe it here as being a thinking chatbot. So it's an advanced model from OpenAI folks who first brought you ChatGPT. And it actually thinks before it answers. And it'll actually come up on screen telling you what its thinking process is, which is kind of cool. There are three models that are currently available. 01, future production version, 01 preview, which is available now, and then 01 mini, which is really aimed more at technology specific and programming specifically. But you can choose from those. So here's an example of a run on it. So it says, if it takes 3 hours for three towels to dry in the sun, how long does it take nine towels to dry? And it's a little bit of a tricky question, especially for a chatbot. And the thinking behind the logic is that the towels dry independently. So the drying time is 3 hours. It's the same for one towel or any number of towels because they all dry at the same time. So it actually did come up with the correct answer of 3 hours. So GPT-01, there's another video here on it, the best model he's ever tested. And on this one, he had some interesting tests on the model, including prompting it, how many words are your response to this prompt? And the answer came back, this response contains 5 words, which actually does contain 5 words. And he said that when he tested that at ChatGPT and Perplexity AI, they didn't get it right, whereas this new model actually did. So kind of neat stuff. Good videos. They're worth watching. So anybody who's interested in the latest advances in AI technologies and so forth, highly encouraged to check them out. Now I'm going to turn it over to Bob Harris, who's going to take us through a presentation on some new stuff also on AI. And Bob Harris, take it away.
Very good. Thank you, Chris. Okay. Good evening, folks. A charming assistant, this robot here, was going to give you a complete rundown tonight on WebSim, but I'm sorry, on the way here, it got stuck in one of those captcha loops. You know, it's still trying to prove it's a robot. So, you're stuck with me. I am a human. And I only know how to use WebSim for one thing. So we'll go forward. Go. And. So, first I want to thank Tom Trache for sharing WebSim on the forum back in June of this year. Now, WebSim AI is a very powerful multi-tool, and I use it often to read graphics. New sites these days are all using AI, and they create some intense graphics, and I love graphics. I use them in all kinds of stupid things. And of course, I know I can't just create and copy these, recreate these images or copy them and use them. But it challenges me to try to recreate something similar or maybe even better. Well, I can tell you in the past, this was not easy to do. We'll move forward here. Thank you. So if you saw an image like this, a cool image like this, a fellow surfing with a polar bear. If I saw that, I had a little file, I would save stupid things like that and do later reference, whatever. But how would you recreate this or even make something better? Well, I would go to Perchance, type in my words, but it never really came close. Then by sheer chance or luck, I discovered WebSim AI will analyze any PNG image or graphic and provide an incredibly well-written description. This is how it works for me. So first, I use my free screen capture tool called GreenShot, and I save the image as a PNG file. You might prefer the window snipping tool. I think GreenShot does the corners really precise, but that's my favorite, whatever you want. And save the image. I'm going to show you a lot in the next few slides, so please watch carefully so you don't get lost. Next, please. So, first we go to WebSim AI. It's a very simple, plain page. We sign up for a free account. I like to use Google Sign In for stuff like this. When you're signed in properly, I say don't see the slides. Okay, anyway, if you're signed in properly, you'll see the word free plan there. You sign in. If you don't see the word free plan, you're not signed in. And sometimes you may have to sign in one more time. So we'll go forward one more slide here, please, with the free plan. And then we arrive at the website, and we have our PNG file saved to our hard drive. And we simply open a new window and drop and drag our PNG graphic right into the gray box. When it arrives there, the box will turn blue. And then, or you can use the paperclip icon. You can manually browse your hard drive and upload the image yourself manually. And then number three, we simply enter our prompt we want to use in the description box. And here we're going to write, please describe this image in detail. Okay, we'll go next, please. So your screen should look something like this. Up on top, we have our prompt. We have, please describe this image in detail. And below that, we have a little icon, a small icon that shows represents our actual image. And then we simply click the arrow up on top of the page, the top right. And then we hit that and we press next. And wow, we see all this. The graphics aren't on the screen, but extraordinary surf adventure. This description begins with an overview of the scene, capturing all the surfing aspects and, of course, the unexpected polar bear. It described the surfer's appearance, his posture, his calm demeanor, and so much more. It goes on to say the waves are impressively large, curling over to create a classic barrel shape. The waters are vibrant blue, tropical seas. The spray and foam are flying off. I'm getting wet right now reading it. Okay, I can tell you it would take me a month of Sundays to create a text like this, and it would be awful. Now, don't forget, we have this text. We're going to go back in time now. Go next slide, please. I take you back to September 4th. You may recall, on Wednesday, September 4th, on this big channel, we introduced Ideogram 2.0, The amazing new software was just released August 21st of this year. Next slide, please. Ideogram breaks through all or many AI barriers for image generation. It's powerful. It'll embed text into images, which is something that is almost impossible for all other image generators. And the accuracy is not perfect, but it's impeccable. You get a free account, you get 10 free shots per day, and then it renews again the following day. You get 10 really high quality images, nothing like ever seen before. And next slide here, please. Folks that were there may recall this was a landing page for Ideogram. After a complaint before, I've made this text a little better for you to read this time. And it's still very basic here. We have our description box on the top left. Then over to the right, we have the magic prompt, on to automatic on or off. And the magic prompt, when you want an image, you have to provide context. You just can't, you can throw in a few words and then it's like throwing the dice. But you need to have good context, put lots of stuff in there. If you're stuck for context, the magic prompt will embellish your text, just like the AI input in Perchance. If you remember that or not, the folks that use that. But anyway, this is handy also for folks that aren't quite used to working with a blank prompt. We have the aspect ratio. Do you want a landscape or a horizontal portrait and all those things? Your model level choosing here is 2.0. If you want the powerful one, it costs 2 credits. Or the 1.0 is still available. It costs less credits. The bottom left, we have our image choice. We have options like automatic, general, realistic, and design, etc. And we hit generate, and then we hit generate, and away we go here. And then we have, you know, back to our stuff here. I hope you didn't forget. We have all this text on hand here. Now, once we have this text, by changing a few words, we can turn a blue sky into gray. Or we could swap out a polar bear for an elephant, and lo and behold, we have done just that. We have swapped out all the words polar bear to elephant. We have full control over every detail. Once we have this text, the possibilities are endless. Next slide, please. Now, we're going to copy and paste this text into WebSim. This is a little crude, I realize, but if you copy and paste it properly, it should look just like this. Next slide, please. There we go. Now we have all our WebSim text pasted into Ideogram. Now here, we definitely do not need the magic prompt. We know exactly what we want. And we're going to pick a landscape photo here. We'll pick image 2.0. We want a realistic photograph. And we're advised that this is going to cost us 2 credits of our daily 10. And we click generate. Thank you, Chris. And after 20 seconds, we have our own custom photograph with a man and an elephant on a surfboard instead of a polar bear. Now here, once again, we could download the image, but if you have your GreenShot screen capture set at 100% image quality, it's a very small program, you'll get a slightly larger image than you would from a download for the free stuff. The images, what you see right here, that's an actual GreenShot screen capture. And I find it's faster, quicker, and simpler than going through an actual download and stuff. But that is a really cool image. So next slide, please. A quick summary of what we just did. It happened very quickly. We used a screen capture to save our graphic as a PNG file. Then we loaded our PNG file into WebSim to generate our text description. And then we copied and pasted our text description into Ideogram. Very good. Next, please. So in the past, I would do this manually with my own typing and stuff. It was okay. It took several tries. But now with the arrival of Ideogram 2.0, this is, for me, it's a major thing going forward. So WebSim will actually read any graphic. It's not the wrong terminology. That's what I call it. And Ideogram will actually create any graphic. Now, mates, before we dive into the next part of our adventure, I must come clean and tell you a little secret about our recent pirate adventure, a pirate photograph. Arr, go ahead, please, Chris. A few weeks ago, I shared with you a real photograph of a pirate ship taken here in Ottawa at Mooney's Bay. This photograph on the top right was taken in August. Well, I recreated that same photograph on the right with ideogram, but I didn't get a chance to show you exactly how I did it. Next slide, please. To create the perfect pirate photograph portrait, I used WebSim AI to meticulously analyze my own photograph right down to the very last hair and eye patch. And then with that text treasure in hand, I sailed over to Ideogram 2.0 and created this masterpiece. So while some pirates might bury their secrets, I'm dinging up mine to share it with all of you. Let's keep moving forward and try out some text. What you see here is a graphic from the welcome screen in Ideogram. Once again, we grab the image with our window snipping tool, or I use GreenShot, and save this as a graphic, a PNG graphic. And then we use WebSim to analyze our PNG graphic. We say describe this graphic. Once we have that text in hand, we swap out a few words and throw it into Ideogram. Now, one tip here is that the text you're using that you want to see must be within quotation marks. And we press generate an ideogram, and lo and behold, thank you, Chris. Before you know it, wow, we have this. You don't need any artistic skills for a graphic like this. This is cool, but there's more. Go ahead, please, Chris. This is a beautiful picture I took with my cell phone. I'm walking the dogs one day, and I see this house and nearby, I won't say where. I have absolutely no idea what flowers are, but I knew this looked really nice. They're stunning. But what kind of flowers are these? You might have guessed, WebSim to the rescue. So we make sure our photograph is saved as a PNG graphic. We simply drop and drag it into WebSim. For this one, we're going to use the prompt, please describe this photograph in detail, and especially describe the flowers. I didn't show it on this page here. You know enough to say, to watch for the free plan logo. So if it's not there, sign in again. And then we click the top right photograph. Thank you. Unbelievably, we get this. It starts off with a beautiful title, just like the surfing thing did. A charming home with a vibrant flower garden. This, it says the house is a true single ranch home. The true star of the image is the expansive flower garden. And there it goes. It said there's purple and pink phlox, day lilies, black-eyed Susan, all in extreme detail. This description actually showed up in a very local newspaper. We won't get involved in that. So next slide again. So have you ever had problems describing a very simple and plain photographs? Well, just load your PNG graphic into WebSim and you type, please describe, next slide please. Please describe this photograph. And it's never at a loss for words. We have a hiker is an older gentleman with a friendly demeanor. So it's usually very accurate, but it goes on and on. Got that one wrong anyway. The forest is a lush trail. It goes on with amazing description. I know this isn't too exciting. How about some food? Let's try WebSim with some fantastic home cooking. So, a friend kindly dropped off a large container of salad at our home. And before it was all gone, I realized that I wouldn't mind trying making this myself. But I really had no idea what was actually in it or how to make it. So, got my cell phone out and snagged this photograph. Went over to my PC, used GreenShot for a screen capture, and you guessed it, WebSim to the rescue. We drop and drag our PNG graphic into WebSim. We use this prompt. Please tell me what are the ingredients of this salad? What is it called and how do I make it? And in 10 seconds, here we go. Lo and behold, we have... It says, it is a Mediterranean chickpea salad based on the image It's a refreshing, nutritious salad, combines vegetables and protein. It says, let's break down the ingredients in the next page, please. It goes on to tell me all the ingredients. We've got cherry or grape tomatoes, fresh herbs, olive oil for dressing, and you can taste the olive oil, lemon juice in there too anyway. And we have the instructions are here, and all with WebSim with that graphic. Let's move over to Ideogram now full. So next again, please, here. Ideogram, please create a realistic photograph of a white bulldog talking to an audience while standing behind a podium. It's made of wood. There's a white sign in front with red letters. And the red letters are in the brackets again with quotation marks. OPCUG wanted red letters. I wanted red letters. The dog's talking to a bunch of people. Behind the dog is a large screen displaying a Windows graphic. You always get four pictures. Pick the best one. We got this. I would say that is pretty classic. That's everything we asked for. I am impressed. Okay, you want something more exciting? I'm sorry. Let's try one more. Let's try something really crazy. Try asking Ideogram, and this is text. I had to think about this, pause a little bit and think about it. Ideogram, please create a realistic photograph of a river flowing out of a large wall-mounted TV into a living room and onto the floor. I thought a little more. Well, the river is coming from mountains and forests. A kayaker in a red kayak is paddling right into the living room. And then I wanted to describe the room. The room is clean and neat with modern furniture. Do you think that Ideogram can do this? I know perchance wouldn't have a chance. But anyway, let's go to the next screen, please. Lo and behold, there it is, everything we asked for. Now, I must confess, I wanted a humorous title and caption, so I tossed it back into WebSim and said, give me a caption or title. It came back with a title and caption. It says, breaking news, wall-mounted TVs recalled after kayakers start paddling straight in the living room. So once again, we use both these programs to get this image here with the caption. But then I realized that if the TV was on, why is nobody watching it? So I went back to Ideogram and I asked for an almost bald guy sitting. Oh, you already had it.
Oh,
You got
sorry.
you and I see it there. You see it there. Sitting on. Well, I'll go back to. I asked for an almost bald guy sitting in the chair, holding a beer and watching TV. And I wanted to say the man was shocked. Next slide, please. And there we have it. It always makes three pictures. Now here, I had to use my amazing artistic skills to pick the best graphic. And it was tough, but I did it. I picked the one on the bottom right as the best graphic. So we'll see that one enlarged up now. Next slide, please. Now, I was just as shocked as the guy holding the beer because it was everything we asked for. But still, I realized this is not right because the man is not looking directly at the TV or the kayak. So I went back into Ideogram, cost me a little more credits, back into Ideogram, and it twerked the text a little bit. And the next slide's the last slide here. I think this one is close enough. A different guy, the room is slightly the same, different window, different picture on the wall. And then the red kayak's coming into the room. The guy looks shocked. The canopy is green. And that's about all I have here for tonight. A little more for you here. I'll get this floor cleaned up here. So I have a couple more slides for you here. Thank you all for joining me in this journey as we learn to use the power of AI. You can do all this and much more. Now, if anybody here is interested and trying out this newest and most powerful, I've tried a lot of these, by the way. If you want to try out this new powerful image software, Ideogram 2.0, maybe you really won't have to learn the hard way like I did. I like doing this. I went through the hard way. So I have a special offer for anybody here that wants to dig in a little bit and actually try Ideogram. You won't have to do it like I did. So here we go. Thank you, Chris. An invitation I'm offering now. After next week's session, I'll be hosting, if there's interest available in here, an Ideogram special interest gathering for new ideogram users. This will be a little in-depth for anybody that hasn't used it before. You really won't catch on. But I must stress, I only do simple stuff. I don't get involved in either registries, or I can't do all that. That's over my pay grade. But I can do simple and fun stuff. So you won't have to go through all the stuff that I did. I'll get you on the feet running. So if you've already tried Ideogram before next week, I'll stay a little longer next week, 15, 20 minutes. I'll show the new users of Ideogram a few tips. Stay a little longer next week. And have fun, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this. And thank you for tolerating all my stupid fun. And thank you very much, Chris.
Oh, thanks a lot, Bob. That was great. I'm amazed by how well it can do things. I still have a bone to pick, I guess, if I go back to this one. Some of that water is not flowing out of the TV, but other than nitpicks like that, that is pretty amazing to be able to come up with that just from a text prompt on it. Yeah. So, incredible.
Oh, yeah, and you can twerk it again. And I had one of them truly came out of the corner, out of the walls. But you always get four images,
yeah.
And I try to ignore the three and get one I liked. That one's pretty much not bad there.
Yeah.
And the carpeted floor, the furniture was all I asked for, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty incredible what this is coming out of AI nowadays. And it seems to be accelerating to a great extent as well. So thanks very much. Folks, I think if you are interested in this extension to next week's Q&A, please throw something into the chat saying that you would be happy to have it. But I think regardless of whether we get a lot of interest showing up, I bet you that Bob will be ready to do it next week. And so plan on sticking around past the 8:30 if you are interested in this next week. So thanks again, Bob, and thanks
very
for
good.
The future of coming up with this ideogram SIG. So very interesting.
And if you want to try it, folks, you don't need to be an expert. Just log in at least once or twice and try it. And then you come back on Wednesday night, and I'll get you off on the right foot. And you'll be making really cool stuff really quick. Took me weeks to learn that. And anyway, thank you.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks very much, Bob. Okay, we will move on then. So this was another one that Alan had put in, and I will speak to because, again, his voice is gone. So he was wondering if an authenticator app is really more secure than using SMS or text messaging when you need two-factor authentication. And I guess this came out of the fact that he was working with TD Bank, and they wanted to use an authenticator app. And there's a link there for the PowerPoint presentation we had, I guess it was last week, week before, on this one. So logging into a bank with two-factor authentication, you first always have to have your username and your password. And then the bank server will issue a challenge and say, you know, we've sent a code to another device of yours or something like that. And then you have to go and get that code, type it in, and then you're logged into your account. So two-factor authentication and with multi-factor authentication, most commonly, your first factor is user ID and password. I've not seen any cases where it differs from that. And then factor two is normally an SMS or a text message with that security code. And you'll see it on the screen there. So you'll get that text message on your phone, and it'll say, please enter the following digits into the web page as you're trying to log in. So you do that, and then you get logged in. But there is an alternative technology to text messaging, and that's using an authenticator app. And there are a number of authenticator apps out there, and it should be the case that any authenticator app can be used in any circumstances. There really are a mix-and-match type thing. So here there's an authenticator app rather than a text message that comes up with a, in this case, six-digit number. Now, there are authenticators where there is a 30-second countdown where you only have 30 seconds and then the number will automatically change to something else. They give you the countdown so you know that if you're down to the last couple of seconds, just wait until you get a new number and then you'll have full 30 seconds or whatever to copy that down and enter it in on the web page. So which two-factor authentication is more secure? So the general consensus is that an authentication app is more secure than text messaging. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First off is that it's tied to your device as opposed to your phone number. And we've talked about SIM swapping previously, where if somebody can get your phone company to move your phone number to their device, any text messages will go to their device rather than yours. Whereas if you're using an authentication app, it's actually tied to your phone. The other thing is that authentication apps can be set up to be time-based so that you have a one-time password that is only good for about 30 seconds rather than the typical thing where a number will be good for like up to 5 minutes or something like that where you can type it in. So apps can also require a PIN number, fingerprint, facial recognition for access. So there's a number of other ways that you can do that two-factor authentication. So for the app to work properly, the app has to be registered with the bank. You run the app on your phone, you log into your account, and there is a secret key that is negotiated between your app and the copy that's maintained on the bank server, and then that is used for the time-based thing where it can actually give you a one-time code that'll only be good for a very brief period of time. And the bank server does all the same calculations as your device is doing, and therefore, as the number changes, it changes both on the servers, the bank server, as well as on your device. So when you enter it in, it can compare the two numbers and come up with the same result. Okay, if there are any questions on that, how is it registered with the bank? That Carol asked, how is it registered with the bank? That's when you run the authentication app on your device. It communicates with the bank, and when you log into your account and so forth, it actually registers it electronically at that point. And I think that's all we had on there. So if there's any further, we'll come back to it. So this is a share that we had come in just today, I guess it was, and it was all about backup. And so, of course, everybody on the call here, of course, has good backups. You don't want to lose your important data, and that's why you have backups. You want to be able to get backup and running very quickly if you have a disaster, such as a hard disk failure. Fire theft, electrical surge, anything like that that takes out all of your data on your computer, you want to be able to get back up and running quickly. You ideally should have multiple levels of protection, so file level, real-time backups, so that as you're creating files, they're backed up automatically and immediately. Version backups, so that you can go back and get a specific version of a file you're working on, whether it was 2 hours ago, a week ago, or a year ago. You want to have full disk image backup so that you can recover without having to reinstall Windows, reinstall all your apps, and then recover your data. You want to have offsite backups so that if you have a fire, it doesn't take out all your backups as well as your computer. And in an ideal sense, you should have three copies of all the important files so that if any one of your sources of those files disappears, you still have two copies that you can count on to be able to do a recovery. So, the context for this problem that came in from Stefan, and he uses Macrium Reflect as his backup software, and he likes it because it has a command line interface that you can use for full and incremental backups, which means you can script things. So you don't have to sit and click on buttons and things like that, and you're not limited to the interface that they provide you for doing things like scheduled backups and so forth. You can have things done much more powerfully. So what he does is he has PowerShell script, and it does more than just the backup. So first off, it checks to see whether the primary backup drive is actually connected. And if it doesn't show up, it waits until it actually does show up. So if it's gone to sleep or something like that, it can wait for it to wake up before it actually runs the backup. It then actually runs the full or the incremental backup using Macroom Reflect with the switches appropriate for it to say where to backup the file and what backup job is and so forth. It will erase previous backup files as required to make sure there's enough space for the new backup. And then after the backup is complete, it'll check if a secondary backup drive is connected. And then it uses a utility that's built into Windows called RoboCopy, which will mirror his primary and secondary backup drives so that they both have the same data on it. And he's been using the script for more than a year. So he had a recent problem. So the backup actually completed without any errors at all. But then RoboCopy, when it was trying to synchronize the two drives, it got stuck at 20.8% while it was copying that backup file to the secondary drive. And it came up with error 23, data error, cyclic redundancy check. So typical error message that is pretty undecipherable by mere humans. So he went to the event viewer, and this is built into Windows where it'll actually log significant events on your computer. And under there, he found device hard disk 3, DR3 has a bad block. So that was what was RoboCopy was getting stuck on. So then he went to device manager and see what is hard disk 3. And so when he brought up the details of his storage devices, he could see that disk 3 was his My Passport drive, and that's letter P that was on there. So he confirmed that this was his primary backup drive, and or I think his secondary backup drive. So he ran a check disk slash R, which will allow it to find bad blocks and mark them as bad so they won't be the operating system won't try to use them. It was on his primary backup drive. And check disk is by no means a fast operation. So the estimated completion time on it was going to be 87 hours. He was actually pretty confident that the check disk would have found and marked out the bad sectors, but he just decided to destroy the drive, bought a new USB drive, and carried on from there. So the lessons learned on this is that make sure that your backup file can be read by both using the backup verify command or copying the backup file to another drive. That's a good way to ensure that the actual file is the blocks have been written to disk correctly, and the backup verify will actually look at the integrity of the image file itself to make sure that it is consistent with it internally. Both options would have taken the same amount of time. It takes about 4.5 hours to run a full backup on a system, and it's about the same amount of time it takes to copy the backup file to a secondary disk. It was about a 1 terabyte file that was being generated and copied. This, for me, this is a statement I often say, is we don't backup for backup's sake. We backup so we can recover. So make sure you test your backups. I always recommend that people do periodic checks of the backup. All you have to do is try to recover one file. So just randomly choose a file on your computer. Use your backup software to see if you can actually recover that particular file. I don't suggest that people blow away entire partitions or their entire hard drive and see if the backup works to recover it all. If something bad were to happen, you're going to be in a really bad position, but you can at least test it by recovering single files. Another thing that is good is when you're dealing with backup software like Macroom Reflect or any image backup software, they will always allow you to create either a bootable flash drive or a DVD, which will have an operating system on it. Could be Linux or it could be Windows. Recovery environment and or pre-installation environment actually, and it'll have an operating system as well as the backup software on it. And so I always recommend that people make sure that they can actually boot from that device, access their backups, and recover a file from it, and find out if all of that works before you actually need it, because sometimes it's a little fiddly. what key you need to use to boot from a flash drive as opposed to the hard drive, things like that. Make sure that everything works before you actually run into a problem. And I see from Alan, I've used Disk Image Recovery several times and have not had any issues so far. I know that, yeah, Alan keeps, especially his data partition, that as a separate entity. And I know that he's tried recovering that before. I have never done full disk recovery, but I've often gone to it for recovery of individual files or folders and never had any issue. But it's good to test.
Do you use file history?
I use file history, and I also use pre-file sync. I'm using both of them because I'm figuring before very long, I am going to be in a position of having to switch over to file history only, or sorry, to pre-file sync, because as I've detailed before, it looks like Microsoft is trying to do away with file history. They're making it more and more difficult to use. And I'm strongly suspecting that by the next version of Windows, file history just won't be there anymore. So right now I'm backing up file level backups with version control or versioning on the files using both file history as well as free file sync. And when file history goes away, I will then have my free file sync backups with probably a couple of years worth of backups, so I won't mind giving up file history at that point. File history is really sweet, though. I mean, the ease of using it is really, really nice. I've always been a big fan of file history. I'm hoping that Microsoft will reverse course on it, but there's been no indication so far that they really want to support file history. They think everybody should be backing it up to OneDrive in the cloud, I think is their take on it, especially if they run out of space and they have to pay Microsoft for additional storage space, they're even happier. Stefan said, I did a full disk recovery on my previous PC, which suffered a hard disk failure. Had no issue. That's good. One thing I'll caution a little bit on doing recovery of systems. A lot of these backup programs, the full image backup programs, say that they can restore to different hardware. I don't recommend that. I did it on one computer, and it worked, sort of. It took several days. I got to the point where I actually contacted support at EaseUS, and I said, this has been running for over 24 hours. What gives? And they said, oh, give it some more time. So I left it for, I think, another day and contacted them again, and they said, oh, give it a little bit more time. And then it finally did complete, but that computer never felt right. There was always little things that just seemed to be not quite right. So when I'm setting up new hardware, personally, the way I do it, I use the installation. I always buy computers that have Windows pre-installed, so I go through the installation, final installation configuration portion of Windows. I manually install all my apps, and then I recover my data from my backups. But certainly an image backup, if you're restoring it to the same hardware, should work flawlessly without any hiccups at all. And I've never heard of anybody who's had issues with being able to do a recovery to the same hardware, with the exception of the hard drive, of course. If you have a hard disk failure, you just replace the hard disk with an equal size or larger hard drive, and you should be able to recover without any difficulty at all. So onward to our last little bit on here, and that is Michelin Johnson had an issue with unwanted McAfee pop-ups coming up that we're trying to get her to pay up for a annual or monthly subscription to McAfee. So she searched on the programs and programs x86 folders, couldn't find a McAfee folder on it. She did send it into suggestion box at opcg.ca, and Alan offered some advice saying that try to uninstall McAfee from control panel, uninstall the program, or you can go to settings, apps, and installed apps, and you can uninstall it from there. It turned out there was no entry on there. He also suggested using McAfee's consumer product removal tool. which if you've ever installed any McAfee product, that can go in and scrub out all of the stuff that a normal uninstall of their programs leaves behind, or at least they claim it will get rid of all of those things. And Michelin ran that, and it removed hundreds of McAfee files, so McAfee had been installed on her computer, but was still getting pop-ups. So she Googled for McAfee pop-ups, and in Chrome, she enabled the option to don't allow sites to send notifications, which if the pop-ups were coming through in a normal fashion in Google Chrome, that would probably have stopped them, but still got pop-ups. There were some other references that she went to, including something else that Alan had mentioned, that maybe it was a fake McAfee notification. It wasn't actually from McAfee. And so there was titled, "Your browser displays fake McAfee notifications, what to do about it, how to stop the pop-ups from McAfee, fake McAfee pop-up messages, how do I get rid of it?" That was out of a Google search. And beware of this McAfee Google Chrome pop-up scam from Fox News. I'm not sure I trust very much coming out of Fox News, but there you go. How to remove McAfee pop-ups, a step-by-step guide from Comparatech. And so she went through a bunch of those things that they were recommending, and nothing has helped. So Michelin is wondering if anybody else has any other ideas of things that you could do to get rid of a pop-up that looks like that. And Alan says, interestingly, the first time notifications were disabled seemed to work, but the pop-ups came back later on. So the links are all there in the chat. So if anybody wanted to review what sort of things she's already tried, and if anybody else has any other ideas, then we can pass that on to Michelin. I don't know.
One thing you could do is search for McAfee in with the Everything program, and then delete all the folders and files that turned up.
Yeah, I'm really suspecting that it's not anything to do with McAfee, though. This is just a scam, I think. And, you know, if you see it there, it's the PC App Store is the title bar of this. So it, you know, I'm really thinking that this is a scam of some sort. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, using everything to try and ferret out something, it who knows? Alan says the pop-ups are coming from the Chrome browser. And apparently she did check for add-ins. She looked at some of the extensions, so she disabled some extensions that looked dodgy, but I don't think that she actually disabled all the browsers. Harvey has clear browser history. That was one of the things that she said. One of the recommendations was there, so I presume that she actually tried it. Has she scanned for virus and malware? Don't know. That certainly would be a good thing to go online to a couple of the places that will allow you to do free on-demand scans and scan the computer, complete computer, with multiple products out there. There's quite a few free ones out there. And Alan says, no pop-ups in Edge. So maybe switch to a different browser. It might be the simplest the solution to it all. Okay, well, Michelin can check out the chat from and the audio track from this Q&A, and maybe something in there will tweak it. Jocelyn says, what about the extensions? My father had a ton of those. As I said, she did disable some extensions that she thought looked unusual or not too good, and but I don't know if she tried disabling all of them. Harvey says, scan with Malwarebytes ADW Cleaner. Yeah, that's a good one to do it. Yeah, Malwarebytes is a well-respected piece of software for sure. And they do have a free version that will run on demand as opposed to on access, always running on your computer. So, okay, some good ideas there. And keep throwing them into the chat if you have any other ideas. We are into our final 10. So if there's anything else anybody else wants to bring up, then please do so either unmute yourself or throw it into the chat. And in the meantime, I will go on to our wrap-up slides. And so our October meeting, we are going to have Carol Pearson, who is on the call tonight. And her presentation is titled, Everything You Didn't Know But Wanted to Know About the Ottawa Public Library. I've seen Carol's deck, and it is incredible what the services that are available at the Ottawa Public Library. There were several that I was totally unaware of, and a couple that I thought, oh, yeah, I seem to recall that from way back when. And it is really amazing, the free service that we have available to us as citizens of the city. And so I highly encourage everybody to come out to that presentation Carol will be putting on October 9th, which is in 2 weeks. And because it's in 2 weeks, our next Wednesday night will be a Q&A on October 2nd. And so please send in your questions, answers, and topics to suggestionbox@opcug.ca. And I don't see any other things added into the chat. So last call. Oh, Elizabeth sent in a question about security cameras. And so Alan put that into the forum. Because neither he nor I were really familiar with security cameras. So if you're part of the forum, please take a look at that. And if you have any, sorry, it's B who sent in the question. So if you have any comments or suggestions on security cameras, we will be bringing that up at next week's Q&A for sure. Okay, any final questions or comments or wishes? Elizabeth said the camera was very good, had no problem with it at all, used it for outdoor, hung it on the cedar hedge. I think Bob Harris here on the call tonight has had some experience with security cameras as well.
Yes, I'm a big Wyze fan. I've got several of them, and the Wyze 3s can see in absolute total darkness. I mean, I'm talking about an attic that's, I watched one attic all summer in absolute darkness, black and white only, but the Wyze 3s are great. There's no monthly fees. I get cell phone notifications, and it needs power. But anyway, they can't go wrong. Yep.
Okay. Well, we will have that at next week's Q&A for sure. And as I said, if anybody is on the forum, take a look at the question that posed. And if you have any input to that, please show up at next week's Q&A. And if you could send in any information in advance to suggestionbox@opcug.ca, we can prepare a couple of slides with at least some partial answers to B's question, if not a complete answer.
And I can add one more thing. If anybody's interested in the ideogram thing, you won't understand it. You haven't at least tried the program once yourself. But if you're interested in that, just install it or sign up for it once and give it a quick try, and then I'll get you off on the right foot. You'll make any graphic you want. Anyway, that's next week. But you've got to sort of get your sign up done first. Otherwise, it'll go way over your head. It will be easy. That's all I do is easy stuff.
Thanks, Bob. And you'll at least have one student there, because I'll definitely make my account and do a couple of plays with it in advance so that you can teach me how to use it right.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, that's all for me for tonight then. So thanks, everybody, for showing up. Hopefully Alan's voice will recover by next week. And I'll be let off the hook from having to take on the duties that normally are done by Alan. So later on this evening, the contents of the chat, the audio track, and the deck will go up. Alan doesn't have to talk to do his work on that front. So we'll have those all up onto the website later on this evening. So thanks very much, folks, and we will see you next week.